Back in the Old West, Wyoming was a lawless land where life was cheap. Not anymore.
We have so many police officers that there's no room for crime.
But even today, wide open spaces can muffle the whispers of scandal.
The family was quietly, privately dysfunctional.
People talked. It was just like, do you believe it? Do you think he could do that? Do you think they could do that?
With young lovers in trouble and a marriage on the rocks.
It scared the crud out of me just getting close to that edge.
A tragedy becomes something much worse.
I was riding back with a murderer and didn't know it.
It was a 3-word email, dig him up.
An accident is one thing, a double homicide, that's a whole different animal.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. Green River, Wyoming, a mining town that hasn't changed much since the old days, as if the jagged desert cliffs protect it from the troubles of the modern world.
Green River, it is small. We are very Western.
What a beautiful town it is, and it really is. It's just a quiet, peaceful, healthy place to raise a family.
Crime. We have so many police officers that there's no room for crime.
But crime forces its way in. This story of lost innocence begins with high school sweethearts, Leanna Davidson and Bob Duke. The young lovers meet in typing class.
Yeah, they're always together. If you remember one, you remember the other.
I taught Leanna in primary. She was quiet. She was not a troublemaker. She just was a sweet young lady.
She's just soft-spoken, and you could just feel the kindness.
Leanna, smart, pretty, and well-liked, is also a practicing Mormon.
Being Mormon, you live by higher standards. You walk a straighter line than most people. And she chose to walk it pretty straight. She didn't drink or smoke or, you know, things of the 90s. she was a good girl.
Bob isn't Mormon, but he also plays it pretty straight and dreams of leaving Green River behind as soon as he graduates.
He was above average. He seemed to grasp all the stuff that I was trying to teach.
He wasn't no tough guy or super stud athlete. He's just a calm kid that kind of just stayed back and camouflaged in.
Bob's parents are respected school teachers with a reputation for being strict.
Bob's parents were more the educated type.
In my opinion, two of the very nicest people you could ever meet. I always really, really liked and respected them.
Not all of Bob's friends are as squeaky clean as he is, especially his friend Roger.
Roger lived a little faster than Bob did. He had a taste for various intoxicants. He was not a perfect citizen.
They're good friends, but complete opposites. Bob and Roger bond over kung fu and hitman movies. But Bob stays respectable, while Roger cultivates a tough guy image.
He was like one of them guys that, I think in eighth grade, had a goatee. You know, smoked Levi jacket. He did get in fights and caused hell, raised hell, but...
Drug peddler, troublemaker. From what I heard and what I had seen, he was basically a thug. I don't know any other way to really put it.
Roger and Bob shoot pool and tear up the desert sage. Typical teenage boys.
He liked to run around in his Jeep. You know, that was his thing.
Off-roading, running around with the boys, things like that.
But those days are about to come to an end. News from Leanna means Bob has to grow up, and fast. And Green River is about to learn that Leanna's not always the good girl who can do no wrong.
Green River, it being a town of 11,000 people, us finding out about them having a baby was pretty quick.
Leanna is pregnant at 16. Rose and Ralph, Leanna's mom and dad, stand by their daughter.
They were very loving, kind parents, and very accepting, non-judgmental.
I'm sure they felt just like the rest of us. You know, they started a little bit early, but, well, you know, life will go on.
I can see Rose being assured that Leanna was mature enough to take care of a child.
Bob's parents find it more difficult to accept. They had big plans for their son.
I can see Bobby and Larry thinking, oh my word, his life's ruined. I think Duke's were probably more upset about it than Davidson's would have been.
Bob dreams of leaving Green River, of going to college, and exploring the world. Leanna's dreams are more modest.
I think she epitomizes the all-American girl, hopes and dreams of raising a family here in Green River.
No matter. In small-town Wyoming, there's not much of a choice.
If you got someone pregnant, you married them. Or if they got you pregnant, you married them. It was just done.
I think that they knew what was right.
Bob and Leanna marry on May 25th, 1991, the same day he graduates from high school.
You know, I'm sure there might have been some family pressure there.
Less than 3 months later, Leanna, age 17, gives birth to baby Eric.
Oh, he was a doll. He was a beautiful little boy. He was. I will tell you this. I mean, Ralph and Rose adored him, but Dukes idolized him.
Psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell see challenges ahead for this young couple.
I think they literally felt it was their duty and obligation to do what they thought was the right thing, and the right thing in this case was to get married and have that child.
Relationships that start really young can be successful. It's just that anytime you begin an endeavor like that that's difficult, even for people who are fully ready and fully planned it, on a shaky footing, it just increases the likelihood that there are going to be problems.
I think the marriage and having a child so young was easier on Leanna, because she did always aspire to be a mom and a homemaker. But for Bob, he had big ideas. He wanted to leave the area where he was living. He wanted to go to college. And so it was a giant sacrifice for him to make.
Even though he's young, at first, Bob seems to take his new responsibilities seriously.
He laid carpet and tile and worked in a furniture store, and he started his own business laying carpet for a while. Reportedly did fairly well.
Leanna graduates from high school a year later, then devotes herself to her new family.
She adored Eric. She doted on him. You know, very fearful for Eric, she was very protective of him. Some people think that women are, put down or not valued in the LDS religion, and that's not true. You're taught to be a mother. You're taught to be a homemaker. And she exemplified all that.
Leanna fills the house with homemade crafts and dreams for the future.
She was very talented, and I think that she had goals of opening a craft store, and she loved doing those types of things.
Still, this young marriage is not always a bed of roses. Bob was independent, and this would sometimes clash with his family obligations.
It appears that his goals were still being a young man with no strings, doing what Bob wanted to do.
You know, she was home and family, and he was other things, adventurous things, exploratory things.
They were faced immediately with having to grow up right after high school, and that's hard.
Bob starts spending less time with his family.
I don't believe Eric was a priority for him. You know, it cut into the Bob time. And I think that he had a hard time with that.
To me, being a dad's, it's not talk, it's not money. It's putting in the time. It's quality time. I heard he wasn't there. Just heard he was absent.
Do you know that I never saw Bob with Eric? Never.
Still, no marriage is perfect. And after 5 years, life has settled into a routine. Until suddenly, tragedy strikes. On August 10th, 1996, the Dukes drive out of town for a birthday picnic. Eric has just turned 5. They turn up a remote desert track to the very end of Lost Dog Trail.
First of all, you've got a pretty good cliff that's there. Second of all, it opens out into this open basin above the lake, and it seems like you're 300 feet in the air.
It's a breathtaking spot, looking out over the vista of Flaming Gorge Reservoir.
From the time we were young, really young kids, 7, 8, 9 years old, we were climbing up the mountain, chasing lizards. You know, we look at cliffs, they're all over the dang place.
But the precipice at the end of Lost Dog Trail is not just any cliff.
When I went out there, it scared the crud out of me just getting close to that edge.
The way Lost Dog is, no. You wouldn't have let your child out there.
Then, the unthinkable happens.
Very few people actually understood just how bad that cliff is.
You lose a child, you're never the same again.
Two teenagers face an unplanned pregnancy, followed by a shotgun wedding. Still, Bob and Leanna Duke dream of a promising future together. But their dreams are dashed on the rocks at Lost Dog Trail.
We were called to the cliffs out on Lost Dog. We will need rope rescue. There's apparently, we didn't know at the time, two people went off the cliff. That's all we knew.
There's no sign of Leanna or Eric. Bob Duke is in a state of shock.
He told the investigator that Eric was on the cliff chasing lizards.
They were up on the top of that cliff looking out, and that he went back to the Jeep to get something to drink or a toy or something.
That's what we heard, that Bob was picking up the toys and taking them back.
His back was only turned for a moment.
She and Eric walked too close to the edge. The cliff gave way.
He heard Leanna let out a scream, and that Eric had fallen, and she went after him.
The child fell. She grabbed for him. They fell.
Seemingly inconsolable, Bob tells first responders he'd never before driven down Lost Dog Trail and had no idea how dangerous it was.
They were riding around, looking for a place to have a picnic, and just ended up there.
Both Leanna and Eric died immediately after a fall of 180 feet.
They were pretty well tore up. I don't like to talk about that. I tried to forget it. It wasn't pretty.
Leanna Duke was just 22. Eric Duke, just 5 years old.
A lot of things go through your mind. It just seemed like such a waste, you know, a young life, well, two young lives right there.
Bob Clevenger rides back to town with Bob Duke.
I tried to make small talk with him. I did not want to say anything that would upset him. And I walked him into his house, into his parents' house. And all I said is, your son needs you now. And then I left.
Both parents, sets of parents, were just devastated. I mean, they were devastated at the loss of both of them. Bob literally showed no emotion. We left the mortuary and went home, and I told Rudy, he asked, do you think he even realizes that they're gone, what's happened? And he said no. He said he's not even in touch with reality.
The tragedy is ruled an accident by the Sweetwater County Sheriff's Department.
We've had a few kids fall off cliffs. Four-wheelers, motorcycles. The way it happened, that's what got us. Knowing that they went up there for Eric's birthday, that's what got us.
Leanna and Eric are buried side by side in the Riverview Cemetery.
The next day, I took flowers to the house, and the house was just covered with flowers.
The whole town is full of sympathy for the Davidsons, for the Dukes, and for Bob, a widower at just 23 years old. And then Bob gets on with his life, perhaps too quickly.
A month after the funeral, I was coming home from base, and I was driving past a gas station, and I noticed Bob Duke and his new girlfriend, and they were happy, and it just struck me as being odd.
It's difficult in the immediate aftermath of a tragedy to say how somebody should and should not react to it. There are people who shut down, there are people who get very expressive, but there are certain behaviors that people engage in that are clearly unusual. Moving very quickly on into what looks like a new happy phase of life is a red flag for me as a forensic psychologist.
I think it's a huge red flag that Bob is seen very quickly after their deaths with another young woman. It makes me wonder if he had a relationship before their deaths that was already started and he had picked it up after their deaths.
The rumors start to circulate. With a new girlfriend in the picture so quickly, Green River gossips wonder whether Bob and Leanna's marriage was as solid as it appeared from the outside. They hear reports that suggest Bob was far from content.
He told others that don't get married, it'll ruin your life. He told a young woman that he would never make that mistake again, referring to having a child.
One of the Duke's neighbors reports hearing them argue behind closed doors.
She heard fights. She would hear him screaming obscenities at her and calling her vile names. And not just once, she heard it on a pretty regular basis.
There are stories that Bob cheated on Leanna and that Leanna knew about it. One woman found her in the most unlikely place, the bathroom of the Wild Horse Saloon.
She opened the door and went in. There was no one else in there except a young woman who was bent over the counter there crying.
Leanna was there, searching for Bob.
And then she told her that a friend called and said he was there with another woman, and that's why she was there in the first place. She indicated that she was in a horrible marriage and that her husband wanted out, and he'd said he would kill her, and she and Deb said, well, we've all been there.
It wasn't the only time she'd seen Leanna in distress.
And she remembered a very unpleasant incident at the grocery store where she saw Bob and Leanna together, and he was yelling, and then he dumped over the grocery cart, and she started to cry, and she's picking up the groceries and putting them in the cart, and he's standing there yelling at her.
Before the marriage, Bob used to talk of college, of travel, no more.
He did feel trapped. He did feel like, you know, he didn't live his life, and he got married too early and had a kid too early, and all his money went to, you know, raising a family and not to Jeeps and toys and things like that.
He told several people various versions, but he didn't like being married. One statement I recall was, he married the wrong sister because the sister was outgoing and social. Leanna was a homebody.
Bob's friends had suggested divorce, but for Leanna, it was not an option.
I don't think that divorce was socially acceptable in Mormon or LDS communities. People stayed together who never should stay together. They stayed together for the kids.
Divorce is ugly, because with divorce comes, and you have a child, comes child support.
Leanna wanted to save the marriage, have another baby.
She wanted children, he didn't. And I think that's a goal that there's really not a lot of compromise there.
They were young. I think that she wanted to do whatever she could to make it work, because she wanted to provide that home for her child. That's what she wanted more than anything.
A troubled marriage and suspicions of infidelity do not give the police reason to believe that Leanna and Eric's deaths were anything but an accident. Until Bob's high school buddy Roger reappears, ready to reveal an extraordinary secret, a secret that will cast new light on the events at Lost Dog Trail.
I believe that a murder had been committed, not one, but two.
A five-year marriage ends with the sudden deaths of Leanna and her five-year-old son, Eric Duke. Friends and neighbors feel nothing but sympathy for grieving husband, Bob Duke, despite his strange behavior after the tragedy. But one local cop has niggling doubts from the very start. Back in 1996, after Leanna and Eric died, Mont Meekum drives out to the end of Lost Dog Trail.
So I didn't like a story. You don't take your small child and your wife and go have a picnic on a rock ledge on three sides. When I went to the cliff and looked over, in my opinion, I had no doubt. I believe that a murder had been committed, not one but two.
From the very beginning, Mont found major flaws in the police investigation. But the case belonged to the sheriff's office, not to him.
They didn't do search warrants. They just didn't do interviews. They didn't do follow-up. They didn't talk to friends.
And there was no forensic autopsy on the bodies.
The sheriff said, hey, it's an accident. Let it go. They couldn't get through their heads, I believe, that a person could throw his wife and his child off a cliff.
Mont's words fall on deaf ears.
Basically, because it was in the county, and I definitely let them know that my opinion was. And the chief basically come down and said, okay, you've spoke your piece, move on. they'll handle it.
Not everyone is suspicious. Most Green River residents are convinced by Bob's account of the tragedy.
He told me the whole story. And, I mean, it tore me up. He said he ran over to the edge of the cliff and could see him down there, and he could hear his son gurgling blood and trying to breathe. He said he could hear that, but he said that there was no way that he could get down there.
But for Mont, the story doesn't ring true. When the rescuers arrived, they had no trouble finding their way down the hillside to the bottom of the cliff. And how could Bob, standing on a windy clifftop, hear his son breathing 180 feet below? The questions remain unanswered. 2 years after the death of his wife and son, Bob moves to Houston to live with his older brother, Mike. Then, out of the blue, Mont receives a startling telephone call. A call from none other than Bob's old friend, the local hellraiser, Roger.
I knew Roger and Bob both from when my boy was in high school with them. They played and joked and, you know, sneak a beer out of my fridge once in a while.
Roger tells Mont he's been keeping a secret. Back in 1996, just weeks before Leanna and Eric died, Roger says that Bob came up with a deadly proposition.
Bob came to Roger and voiced that he was unhappy in his marriage and that he wanted them gone. Roger and Bob had watched some movies. They had, Hitman, I believe, was one of the movies that they'd watched. And they'd discussed and kind of joked around about knocking people off.
Specifically, knocking off Leanna and Eric.
The plan evolved into Bob would pay Roger a sum of money in the neighborhood of $20,000. Roger would shoot Leanna and Eric during a barbecue that the family would be having.
They were gonna shoot him over the fence and make it, a burglary gone bad type situation.
To make it look good, make sure that he shot Bob in the leg or somewhere that it wouldn't be fatal, but that it would make it look real.
Roger says he thought the whole thing was a joke, but when Leanna and Eric fell to their deaths, he believed it was no accident.
He was very concerned, and that was his first thought, was that Bob had killed them.
At the time of the deaths, Bob pulled Roger aside and insisted he had nothing to do with the tragedy at Lost Dog Trail. Roger believed him.
He just didn't think he had done it. He couldn't believe that somebody could do it.
Nobody thinks that their friend would ever kill their wife or child. And so it makes sense to me that Roger just thought that Bob was joking when he made a comment like that.
Well, hindsight is 20/20. It may have been that Roger thought that he was just frustrated with life at home and he was venting and he was sort of fantasizing, but with benign intent. Friends and family members want to find a way to believe the people that they love and care about so that they can maintain the relationship. It's a profound loss if they face the fact that the person is a murderer.
Over 2 years later, Roger has a change of heart about his old friend Bob. He tells Mont that out of the blue, Bob Duke had called him. Bob had apparently spent the $60,000 in life insurance collected after Leanna and Eric's deaths. And now, with his brother Mike, he'd hatched a sinister plan to make more.
He contacted Roger and asked him to murder his parents for hire.
When he finally gave up the whole story, I was, holy smokes. Bob had called him and said that if he would help him kill his mom and dad, that he could have anything in the house that he wanted and just keep it for himself. He also said he could have some of the insurance money also to help him out with some of his debts.
Now that Roger has been asked to help kill Bob Duke's parents, he feels sick with guilt.
I think the guilt or the his feelings for what had happened to Leanna and Eric were pretty strong, and that's what actually brought him to the police.
And then when I asked him why he did it, and that's when, you know, the past started coming up. Well, he wanted me to do the wife and kids. Okay. When he said that, that's when he had me hook, line, and sinker, and I was in this thing, okay? Because that confirmed what I'd always suspected.
Roger's startling confession and a potential criminal conspiracy changes the game completely.
An accident is one thing. A double homicide, that's a whole different animal.
Bob's high school buddy Roger tells Green River police that not only does he believe Bob killed his wife and son, but he's now actively plotting to kill his own parents. Bob makes the critical mistake of calling Roger long distance, which means the case gets turned over to the FBI.
The federal authorities were brought in because of the interstate nature of the conspiracy solicitation. The solicitation was being made from Texas to commit a murder in Wyoming, and so that created federal jurisdiction.
I felt I had a case. There was no doubt in my mind. So then I called the FBI and said, okay, this is what I have.
I remember just having some question about, really, both two brothers, wanting to kill their parents.
But they need more than Roger's word. They need to hear it from Bob directly.
What happened was that Lieutenant Meekum and the FBI arranged to have several phone calls placed that were recorded.
Naturally, Roger would be nervous. I mean, the stakes are pretty high in this type of investigation and these type of phone calls. And so Roger just had to try to get as much information as he could regarding the plot.
I mean, he was scared, big time.
No one is sure whether Roger can pull this off.
Reference conspiracy to commit murder.
Hello? Yeah, hey, it's me.
Roger gets straight down to business.
Yeah, so remember remember when we talked before about the $20,000 for killing your parents? Yeah. I'm thinking I might want that. Do it. Did you have any ideas about maybe how I could do it, or?
You know, Mike and I were talking.
There were some pretty explicit discussions made about the manner in which it would be done. Bob suggested a .22 would be a weapon of choice because it would be quiet and no one would hear it.
If you were quiet enough.
Right.
I can't think of anything more than a door slamming.
Okay.
And everybody's closed up this time. Nobody has open windows or anything like that.
Right.
When Duke's parents came home for the evening, Roger was to shoot them.
So it's just walk in and do it and walk out just like it was, like I lived there, basically, then.
Yeah, the best thing to do would be be there when no one's there.
Right.
And when they come in.
Just wait till they walk in and then catch them off guard. Okay.
Gotta be together.
Okay.
Because my dad does have a gun in the house.
Right.
As well as the $20,000 payoff, Roger would get free rein to ransack the house.
You said that before I could have anything in the house? Like maybe your computer? Cool. What was it that you wanted?
There's a watch.
A watch? Oh.
But the one thing that Bob was adamant that he not take was his dad's watch, because Bob wanted it.
I've had it with this whole thing. I'm tired of hearing about it.
Right.
So, if you did it,
right,
we could probably up that just a little bit.
Just to make it more worth my while?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you did it, we could probably up it another 5.
Okay.
But the key is ASAP.
It was pretty chilling.
cool, collected, thought out. And that just makes it 100% real.
The tone of them would make you believe that it was not a joke.
The FBI now has enough to arrest Bob for plotting to kill his parents. But they want more. They want Bob to implicate himself in the killing of his wife and child.
Roger was starting to panic, you know. I mean, the FBI pushed him a lot harder. They didn't coddle him like I would.
Knowing that we had an arrest warrant, we were going to push pretty hard. And Roger was asked to push and to bring up Leanna and Eric, and he did.
Hey, is there any way we can make it look like an accident, like you did with your wife and kid?
Dude, I did not do that.
You didn't?
No, I didn't do that.
I thought you said you did family before.
What?
When we talked the first time, you said you did. Oh, I thought you said you did that.
No.
Huh.
No. No.
Okay.
No.
Huh.
No, that's how come I didn't. We talked about it, and I didn't want nothing to do with it.
Despite this denial, there is at least clear evidence of a conspiracy to kill Bob's parents. And all the while, FBI agents have been lying in wait right outside. Bob Duke is arrested after an FBI sting operation records him conspiring to kill his own parents. Bob and his brother Mike are both charged with conspiracy. Investigators suspect he's also responsible for the deaths of his wife and child. But during a taped call to Roger, Bob categorically denies it.
Is there any way we can make it look like an accident, like you did with your wife and kid?
Dude, I did not do that.
You didn't?
No, I didn't do that.
When news gets out, the school teacher's sons and their murderous plot are the talk of Green River.
It shocked everybody. I don't think there's any other way to put it. One of our kids from our community.
I mean, what a sock in the face. Who would ever think that any of that would have happened?
People talked. It was just like, do you believe it? Do you think he could do that? Do you think they could do that?
Special Agent Todd Scott breaks the news to Mike and Bob's parents.
Honey? Probably one of the hardest things I've done as an FBI agent. I had the tapes with me. I offered to play them. Their response was, our sons, we're going to stand by them. We don't believe they would do that. We don't want to hear the tapes. And I didn't push.
Can you even imagine hearing your children plotting to kill you for your insurance?
Well, it's extremely unusual for anybody to want to kill a family member, and for somebody to want to kill family members strictly to unburden themselves of the responsibilities of being a husband and father, and then strictly to get money so that they can continue living the lifestyle they want to live, shows a stunning lack of the normal human connectedness and empathy that most of us have for those closest to us in life, our families.
The fact that he could literally go to his parents for financial assistance and say, can I borrow some money to help get back on my feet? But instead of doing that, he'd opt to kill them is appalling. The parents had reported to police that Bob and his brother had a great relationship with them, but the fact that they are conspiring to kill them leads me to believe that there are some secrets that we don't know about.
People seem to think that it was a close-knit family with strict parents and loyal, loving children, and clearly, to some significant degree, that was an illusion.
Faced with recorded proof of the plot, Bob Duke pleads guilty to conspiracy to murder. He's sentenced to 10 years in a federal penitentiary.
Bob received the maximum sentence for the crime that he pled guilty to, which was conspiracy to use an interstate device for murder for hire.
Bob's brother, Mike Duke, gets 21 months for failing to report the plot.
In the calls, it was clear that Bob was in control.
If Bob Duke is capable of plotting to kill his own parents, is he capable of pushing his own wife and son off a cliff?
After hearing from his own mouth what he and Mike were going to do to their parents, there was no doubt in my mind that he killed his wife and his child, that he could do it.
Local police and FBI alike are still bothered by the deaths at Lost Dog Trail.
And I was sitting at my desk and I just couldn't get them out of my mind. And I just picked up the phone and called my friend, Mary Ernst, the death investigator. And I told Mary what had happened. I just said, let me run something by you. She didn't miss a beat. She said, Todd, you've got a homicide. She said, one person goes off the cliff, we're scratching our heads and looking hard. Two go off of a cliff at the same time, especially a mother and a child, no way.
Todd sends the FBI file to the county prosecutors, who are now convinced Bob is responsible, based on Roger's account of the plot to kill Leanna and Eric. But Roger's word is all they have.
It was just an absolute lack of physical evidence. You have a homicide, you have weapons, blood splatter, all sorts of things that just weren't there.
The most convincing thing in this case is the cliff itself. We decided that this was not an accident, that this was a multiple homicide, and we filed the charges because of that.
Taking a leap of faith, prosecutors charge Bob Duke with the murder of his wife and child. It won't be easy to prove their case.
People's memories just don't stick with them, and so it's hard to take an old case and get facts, just the facts.
But photographs are more reliable. And that's how prosecutors find new hope for this investigation.
There was one certain photograph that we all looked at, and it looked very clearly as though there was a mark across Leanna's neck, which might have been caused by a rope or a piece of fabric tied around her neck.
There was a good chance, based upon the bruise that we had seen, that we would find evidence of strangulation. There was some suspicion at the time that maybe there was a strangulation used to disable Leanna, because certainly it would be risky to struggle with someone, on the precipice there.
To prove Bob had strangled his wife, they need forensic evidence. Harold sends the photos to a pathologist.
He emailed me back, and it was a three-word email, dig him up.
So, in July 2000, 4 years after their deaths, they order the exhumation of Eric and Leanna's bodies.
There's a bone in your throat that's called the hyoid bone. If that bone is broken, she was strangled. That's really the only explanation.
The autopsy results come back 4 days later. For Harold and his colleagues, the results are a blow.
And the hyoid bone was intact, and so the evidence that the real smoking gun that we'd hoped to find wasn't there.
It was pretty disappointing. A forensic autopsy indicating a strangulation would have made the case a lot easier.
Prosecutors move ahead regardless. Bob Duke will be tried for first-degree murder. And with no physical evidence, it could go either way. It's the word of Roger, a small-town hood, against his buddy, Bob Duke.
Bob's past, as opposed to Roger's past, were kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum. And so, who are they going to believe? Bob or Roger?
You never second-guess a jury. If we convince 12 of them that he did it, we win. If we convince 11 of them that he did it, we lose. Got to convince all 12, beyond a reasonable doubt.
Bob Duke tries to convince the court that the phone calls with Roger should not be taken seriously.
His testimony during the trial, and he did testify on his own behalf, was always that those conversations were a prank, they were a joke, it was meant to be funny. That was the only explanation I ever remember him giving.
The way that I tried to deal with that is I would quote him or read him a specific passage from the transcript of the conversation. For instance, a 22 would work. It doesn't make very much noise and the neighbors wouldn't hear. And I would ask him, is this part of the joke? You can take them by surprise. When they get home, they're going on a trip to Salt Lake for shopping. You can take them by surprise, and you're free to ransack the property and take property. Is this part of the joke? And so after confronting him with the litany of these quotations, at one point I looked at Bob and I asked him, "Bob, stop me when I get to the funny part." And he just kind of had no reaction to that. There's very little he could say other than, "I didn't mean it, you know, it wasn't serious." And that's what he tried to do, but it was a very hard sell. In fact, I think an impossible sell.
In the middle of the trial, a surprise witness turns up, giving a much-needed boost to the prosecution's case.
We were having a sandwich for lunch, kind of rushed. I had a message that there was someone there to see me. I basically told, you know, my staff that I was too busy. I couldn't talk to anybody. And the woman was insistent that she needed to talk to me. She says, I've got some information about this case. Certainly had no idea it would be something as useful as this turned out to be.
She tells him that she met Bob Duke at a mini-mart in 1994 when she was 13 years old.
She and her sister had been basically out in the streets of little town of Green River. Bob and Roger had essentially picked them up. They were both underage. They wanted to obtain and drink alcohol. Bob and Roger apparently were willing to provide the alcohol in exchange for female company, and they began kind of a dating relationship, as she describes it.
She and Bob spent a month making out and driving around in the desert. Bob confides in her. Things are not going well with his wife, Leanna.
He told her he was married in name only, and that did not want to go through a divorce. But he wanted out of the marriage.
He told her that he was searching for a way that he could get out of his marriage, which would not involve paying child support.
Making out with a minor may be morally dubious, but it's a long way from murder. But then, the witness puts a giant dent in Bob's story. She reveals that Bob brought her out to the end of Lost Dog Trail more than once.
She had been to the crime scene with Bob Duke in 1994. And so he lied and told people that he'd never been there before. That was his first time, and she proved that to be untrue.
She was a concrete witness to testify that Bob Duke's story was false in at least one regard.
She tells her story on the stand, crucially catching Bob in a lie.
One of two things happened out there. Either it was an accident, as Bob Duke had always claimed, or it was murder, as we were claiming. There was nothing in between. And if it were an accident, there's certainly no reason for Bob to lie about the circumstances of the accident.
Nobody knows for sure whether Bob Duke pushed them off the cliff, whether he chased them off the cliff, whether he rendered them unconscious and threw their bodies off the cliff. Nobody knows exactly what happened other than Bob Duke. But we know that Eric and Leanna went out to that cliff and that Bob Duke caused them to go off the cliff, and that's what caused them to die.
The jury takes just a few hours to reach a verdict. Bob Duke is found guilty of first-degree murder. In September 2002, he's sentenced to 6 life terms for murder and conspiracy.
Bob very nearly got away with 2 murders and may well have done so had he not tried to do it again.
Bob's parents never accept that their son was a killer or that they were in danger of being his next potential victims.
They defended both Bob and Mike the whole time. They never, ever wavered. One has to respect their position, because I would imagine that that's probably one of the hardest things for any parent to get their head around, that their child or their children, in this case, would want them dead.
Roger can perhaps claim credit for saving their lives.
I think Roger did the right thing. I mean, I think he's, in this instance, Roger's a stand-up guy, and he did something that was very hard for him.
The thing about it, Roger is straightened out. So, I mean, it helped him in a lot of ways.
Bob Duke has exhausted all of his appeals and is serving one of his 6 life sentences. His crimes leave a shadow hanging over the town of Green River.
It's heartbreaking. Unnecessary, stupid.
That's what I felt down at this scene with the bodies. A waste, you know. It was just a waste.
I'm just glad that justice was served. Lives will never be the same. A lot of lives.